'Twas a few weeks before Christmas, and all through the Franklin home, everyone was asleep, yet spirits did roam.
Chris! Chris!
What is that?
It's probably the gentleman ghost wanting to complain about what shows we're doing again. He's like a spectral David Ace Gutierrez.
Chris!
It's my old podcasting partner, Robert Kelly.
Chris, your time is short.
My time is short? Oh crap, am I gonna die? Wait, are you dead?
No, you're running out of time to do a Christmas episode.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna do one this year.
We did the one Justice League Christmas episode last year, so not really much to do.
But you must. You will be visited by three spirits tonight. They will tell you why.
Wait, you're leaving?
Hey, it's getting dark. I have a long drive, and there's no streetlights out here in this godforsaken countryside. I'm out.
Wait, when will these ghosts get here?
Expect the first when the bell tolls one. Oh, hell, here they all are.
Chris.
Chris.
I'm going back to bed.
How can you sleep through three ghosts wailing at me?
Have we met?
I am the ghost of podcasts past. You have produced a Christmas episode every year. Why not this year?
Well, there's no other DCAU Christmas episodes we haven't covered.
Have you considered launching a new Christmas podcast? I can start one up before your theme song rolls.
No thanks.
I am the ghost of podcasts present. Get to know me better, man.
Whoa, nice barbecue spread.
Why not do another Christmas episode of Supermates? That's the show you're on right now.
Wait, I'm on a show? This is Grant Morrison levels of meta. I'm not sure even Zoom could keep up with this.
I'm the ghost of podcasts yet to come. They are all canceled.
Oh, crap! PJ Frightful!
No. No, it's me, Ryan. Sorry. I'm losing my voice. It's cold outside. But for real, if you don't do a Christmas podcast this year, you will break the chain. All will be lost.
Okay, I'll do a Christmas episode of Supermates. And since you guys scared the bejesus out of me, I'll even do a Christmas edition of The House of Frankenstein. How's that?
Perfect.
Sounds great.
Whatever.
There's a cheery old house covered in snow, festooned all with garland, windows aglow, where the lit-up globules seem to make it shine. It's the Christmas house of Frankenstein.
Welcome to episode 95 of Supermates, Husband and Wife Geekcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Cindy.
And we're back, just 2 months later, and here we are. Very unusual.
I know, right?
And although we used to do a big Christmas episode every year back when we did Supermates bi-weekly,
can you believe that?
We did that bi-weekly.
Good Lord.
This time we're doing something we've never done before, a Christmas episode from the House of Frankenstein. So what does that mean? Are we covering The Nightmare Before Christmas? No, but that's not a bad idea.
Maybe next year.
Yeah, maybe next year. No, we're covering one of my all-time favorite films, and to my notion, the best adaptation of Charles Dickens' immortal classic, A Christmas Carol, the 1951 version, starring Alastair Sim.
Of course, this is a ghost story of Christmas, so it qualifies for the House of Frankenstein treatment, but this version not only feels like a period horror film, it also has connections to both the Universal and Hammer films we both love so much.
Yeah, so since everyone knows the story of Ebenezer Scrooge, we figured there was no point in giving you a lengthy synopsis. We're going to go the commentary route like we did with The Lost Boys. And of course, we'll cover a related comic afterwards. But before we hit play on the DVD, let's go over the cast and crew, shall we?
We'll be right back.
A Christmas Carol, known as Scrooge in the UK, was released December 2nd, 1951 in the US. The screenplay was by Noel Langley, based on the book by Charles Dickens, of course.
Right.
It was directed by Brian Desmond Hurst, with music by Richard Adinsell. Alistair Sim played Ebenezer Scrooge. Kathleen Harrison was Mrs. Dilber. Mervyn Johns as Bob Cratchit.
Come on, dude! How can you not know how to pronounce that in this household, being married to me? What the trap?
See Hermione spelled out right, it does not make any sense. I'm sorry. That name, the way it's spelled, makes absolutely no sense, and it trips me up. But Hermione Granger, no, Hermione Baddeley as Mrs. Cratchit.
Hermione.
Michael Horgan as Jacob Marley. George Cole as young Ebenezer Scrooge. John Charlesworth as Peter Cratchit. Francis DeWolfe as Spirit of Christmas Present. Rona Anderson as Alice.
And not the Rona that's going on right now.
God, let's hope not. Carol Marsh as Fan Scrooge. Brian Roth as Fred. Miles Mallison as Old Joe. Ernest Thesiger as The Undertaker. Glenn Dearman as Tiny Tim. Michael Dolan as the Spirit of Christmas Past. Olga Edwards as Fred's wife. Roddy Hughes as Fezziwig.
Hattie Jacks as Mrs. Fezziwig. Eleanor Summerfield as Miss Flora. Louise Hampton as the laundress. Jiminy Cricket.
Cecilaw Konarski as the Spirit of Christmas Yet to Come.
Okie doke. Elliot McAham as Mr. Snedrig. Peter Bull as the first businessman, the narrator. Douglas Muir as the second businessman. Noel Howlett as the first collector. Fred Johnson as the second collector. Tony Wager as Fizzywig's lad. Patrick McNee as young Jacob Marley. Clifford Mollison as Samuel Wilkins. And Jack Warner as Mr. Jorkin.
Okay, we've got our DVD. I've got a DVD of this one, not a Blu-ray. We've got the DVD queued up. And I've got it to right before it goes into the Renowned Pictures logo, which was the studio that produced this film. So I'm going to hit play, and if you guys are queued up, if you've got a copy of this or can find it somewhere to watch, you can play along with us. If not, you've probably seen it before and don't need to, but we'll go ahead and hit play. And like I said, we see the Renowned Pictures Corporation Limited logo. Renowned Pictures actually has a connection to some horror films because they released the Mother Riley films that were a British comedy. It was a male comedian in drag as an old woman. Oh. And they never could get them to go over here in the States. But there was a film with Bela Lugosi where he played a vampire. Mother Riley meets a vampire.
Oh.
and it was released here as under a different title. But yeah, so there's a little connection. I love how this movie starts out with that really ominous, very Franz Waxman, Universal Monster type score. Hans J. Salter.
Right, heavy on the organ.
Heavy on the dun 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 dun. And then it goes into Hark the Herald, the Angels Sing, you know, which is kind of interesting. Then back into that. So you've got the horror element right from the beginning. And actually, when they tried to book this to play in New York at Radio City Music Hall, they found that Radio City Music Hall thought that it wasn't really a family film. It was too dark, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to play in an art house near Radio City Music Hall because they rejected it for the Christmas season that year. So Noel Langley, who wrote the screenplay, was one of the writers on The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay.
That adapted The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, so
that film that much.
No,
you know.
Yeah, I've never heard of that movie, right? Yeah, so now we're in the early narration in the book, and like it said, one of the narrators is one of the fellas we see here. He's one of the businessmen. I believe he's the heavyset guy. I think he's, because he's got the real deep voice.
Yeah.
There. They don't give him a name, but you know, they're basically asking Scrooge if he's going home to Christmas, and Scrooge is, you know, this is the first indication we get that Scrooge is not interested in celebrating Christmas. It's a humbug. Good day.
Yeah.
And I love this scene here. You know, Alistair Sim is walking, you know, out of the, I don't know. What is
it? It's a gentleman's club.
Yeah, it's a gentleman's club or, yeah. And this guy asks him about, you know, if he can have an extension on his loan, basically. And the way Alistair Sim says, who are you? He just like instantly bites his head off. And he asks him, did I ask you for more time to lend you the money?
Right.
It's like, oh, man.
And I mean, the thing about it is, the pragmatic part of me is...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, some of these people are Scrooge's demeanor is awful, but they're basically asking a businessman to not act like a businessman.
Yeah,
And a lot of this stems from Charles Dickens, you know, his family went to a debtor's prison at one point.
Oh, okay.
And he was basically he went to work as an apprentice somewhere and was basically toiling under the awful child labor of the times until his family paid off their debts and were back out of prison. I mean, his father, I think his whole family, but him went to prison. So now we're back in, we're in the offices of Scrooge and Marley, and there's Mervyn Johns, who plays Bob Cratchit. And one of these guys that is our, one of the collectors is Fred Johnson. And Fred Johnson was in some of the movies we've covered before. He was in The Curse of Frankenstein. He was the old grandpa that Christopher Lee's monster kills.
Right,
and
right.
He was the priest in Brides of Dracula that gives
Peter Cushing
the holy water, which he ends up using to cauterize his vampire bite.
Right.
So here's right off the bat, here's a Hammer connection in this film. And, of course, this is the scene where the men are... you know, asking for a charity donation, and Scrooge asks them if, you know, is the treadmill and the poor, you know, the treadmill and the union workhouses, are they still, you know, going? And, you know, he's glad to hear it because he was afraid something had happened, you know. So, this is the part where, you know, yeah, businessman, but yeah, horrible human being.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah. Alistair Sim, he was mostly known for comedies in Britain. And he, at one time, like the year before this, 1950,
really?
Yeah, he was voted England's number one box office star. But this is really the only film that I know of where he's that has made it any impact over here. And it didn't initially do well here in the United States. It just through being played parentally on TV,
yeah,
and then through home video and stuff, it you know, it gained a reputation as the best, if not one of the best, because there was a version from 1938 with Reginald Owen that it's well regarded. It was made by MGM, I think, and he played Admiral Boom in Mary Poppins. There's
okay.
Another Mary Poppins connection that we'll get to here later. But this version is, you know, not just me. I mean, I grew up loving this version and thinking it was the best, but it wasn't until I got to be an adult that I realized, okay, other people think this is the best version too. I remember watching this movie. One thing, I mean, this is weird, but I remember my birthday's in December,
mm-hmm.
December the 12th. And I remember getting the
That's
Hall
the
of...
That's the reason your name is Christopher.
Right. I remember getting the Hall of Justice for my birthday, the Superpowers Hall of Justice, on my, I guess it would have been my 10th birthday, 1984, and watching this while I was putting it together.
Oh,
so it was
okay.
On TV. I mean, I had seen it many times before.
Right, right.
But, I mean, it was like one of those perfect moments, one of my favorite movies, and I'm putting together the Hall of Justice, so... So, yeah. Mervyn Johns, actually, he has some horror cred, too, that plays Bob Cratchit here. He was in the early anthology film Dead of Night. It's a British anthology. It was released in 1945, I believe. And he was also in The Day of the Triffids, about the plants that attack, take over the world and attack England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But they always... The actor that plays Tiny Tim here, I've heard places, you know, he is a little, Glenn Dearman. He is a little tall, a little big, to be Tiny Tim, I guess. But he does a really good job in the film. And we see him looking in the window here. Well, we had the visit from Scrooge's nephew, Fred, which is, of course, important to the story. I shouldn't have talked over top of that. But Fred came by to visit, and, of course, his uncle told him that, you know, he's not going to come dine with him because Christmas is a humbug. But the kids, Tiny Tim looking in the window here at the toys, that's going to be picked up on in the musical version with Albert Finney that Rob and I covered last year on Film and Water. Now, this is Hermione Baddeley as Mrs. Cratchit. I got her name right. I didn't see. I wasn't looking at it. So I know Hermione is her name. And she plays the maid, one of the maids in Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
And that's one thing people know her for. And oddly enough, she is the maid to Glynis Johns, who played, of course, Mrs. Banks, and also played Lady Peasoup on Batman.
Oh, yeah.
She is the daughter of Mervyn Johns, Bob Cratchit. That's his real-life daughter. So Glynis Johns, from Mary Poppins, Mrs. Banks, is Bob Cratchit, Mervyn Johns' real-life daughter.
Okay.
you get what I'm saying?
I think so.
So there's like this weird, like, connection to Mary Poppins here, but so she kind of ended up like working for her like daughter, I guess, in a weird sort of strange way, but not really. So now Scrooge is back in his office, and it's getting closing time. We don't have the quite some versions you have where Cratchit is literally like watching the clock and Scrooge gives him the stink eye for even thinking about like stopping before the clock tolls 7 or whatever. It makes him work to 7 o'clock at night, the night on Christmas Eve. I mean, this is,
The day of.
This is Christmas Eve, not, he doesn't even get Christmas Eve off. A lot of people don't get Christmas Eve off. We're very lucky that we do. But of course, Scrooge gives him the usual speech about, sticking your hand in a man's pocket every 25th of December. I mean, this is very faithful adaptation. And in fact, most versions are pretty faithful. They change around stuff, but there's always certain lines of dialogue you can depend on. Now, one line of dialogue that's not in this movie that's interesting is one of Scrooge's most famous. He did not say, any man who goes about with Christmas on his lips should be, have a steak of holly in his heart and be boiled in his own pudding. He does not say that in this version, which is interesting. Now, Alistair Sim will get a chance to say it in an animated version from the 1971 that he provides a voice for Scrooge.
I know, we watched that last night.
Yeah, now this line, this part here, shows him at a restaurant, and he says, waiter, more bread. And the waiter's like, it'll cost you extra, sir. No more bread.
use that all the time.
Whenever somebody asks for a piece of bread, I was like, it'll cost you extra, sir. No more bread.
I mean, it's just a Franklin thing, I guess.
It's a Franklin thing. This is how ingrained this movie is
in our household,
yeah. And in my family's household, this is my dad and my sister. This is all our favorite version of Scrooge. Now we see
Marley on the door knocker.
Marley on the door knocker.
Personally, I like it better when it's Goofy, but I like that version better.
Scrooge. Alistair Sim. I mean, he was a partially bald man. He had the ring of hair around him, when you see him in normal pictures. But they give him this wonderful, like, shock of just unkept hair. And in
it's scraggly.
He's scraggly looking. Now, he's not dirty looking. Like, Albert Finney looked dirty. His fingernails, he looked like he didn't even bother to keep himself clean, which was just kind of, But Alistair Sim doesn't look dirty, but he does just look cheap and kind of unkept, And he's got those wonderful bulging, eyes. They're bulging, but they're like set deep in his skull. And he's actually still hearing the call of Scrooge as he goes up. Now, the sets here, I mean, this looks like something straight out of a horror film.
Yes.
As he's crawling up this darkly lit, you know, staircase. Now, we don't have the phantom hearse that we have in the book or in the Finney version, but still very creepy. And his apartment upstairs, or I guess you'd call it, I guess this is his townhouse.
Right.
But he, you know, apparently lives...
It's barely furnished.
Barely furnished. He's, you know, it's, you know, they later say meager sticks of furniture, and we'll know where he got his furniture from later. Now Scrooge is, you know, sitting at the fireplace with his bowl of broth or gruel or whatever it is he's eating. So, yeah. Now, the director, Brian Desmond Hurst, he was well known in Britain for his war films, but he's best remembered for this picture. In fact, I don't think even his British films, again, they didn't really make a dent over here. And oddly enough, he didn't direct any other Dickens adaptations, despite this film being very popular, especially in the UK. He did direct a film called Suicide Squadron in 1941, but it's not connected to the Suicide Squad. And in fact, you know, a lot of this cast is big in Britain. I mean, they were huge stars in Britain, but a lot of them didn't really make a dent here other than some character work. But, you know, I mean, and a lot of them made that dent in horror films.
Right.
You know, which we'll get to later, you know, because there were a lot of, you know, Hammer, Amicus, a lot of British studios produced horror films. So, a lot of the other cast appeared in other Dickens adaptations, such as Oliver Twist from 1948 and The Pickwick Papers from 1952, which was written and directed by the screenwriter here, Noel Langley, who, as we said, worked on The Wizard of Oz. So, now, here we're going to have... I love how the buildup of Marley's ghost is here.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, we're not talking again. We're watching it.
Sorry.
So what do you think about his reaction to Marley here?
Oh, heck fire, yeah!
But, I mean, he's not... Other Scrooges are way more subdued. I mean, he's actually like... You know, I mean, you feel... That's the thing that puts me Alistair Sim over for me, is he reacts like... It's not like he's reacting to this story everybody knows. He reacts like, oh shit, a ghost just walked in my house.
Right, right. You know,
it's like... And then, you know, I mean, he's kind of yelling at him, you know, because he's like, he's so freaked out. You know, it's like, can you sit down? We'll do it then. You know, I mean, just... And now he's, you know, he's so...
He's like, man, are you really over there? I don't think so.
Yeah, and Marley says, you don't believe in me. I don't. Why do you doubt your senses? Because a little thing affects them. It's like disorder of the stomach makes them cheat.
An undigested bit of beef. A piece of cheese. A fragment of an underdone potato.
More gravy than of grave to you. Whatever you are. I like this part. I'm not sure this is another version. Do you see this toothpick? I do. You're not looking at it. And the amazing thing is that Michael Horton was not in the room with him.
Oh.
They were, he was filmed separately and included with what was then called an optical printer. It's pretty effective. I mean, the effects here work really well. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just, and now.
And then that scream, man, that he does. Yeah. Oh, man.
He grabs his chains and lock boxes that he's all fettered to and. Yeah, and now he's like, do you believe me? Yes, I do, I must.
What gets me, though, is that Marley has all of these chains on him and everything else like that, but apparently at some point he donated to those collectors.
I don't think so.
Well, they said, you know, because they, you know, they said Marley, you know, when they went.
I always got the impression that these guys were, those guys were like new to the block, you know, an area, and they just, it still said Scrooge and Marley on the sign because Scrooge was too cheap to ever change it.
True.
And that, I think that's what it was. I don't think Marley ever gave to him. Although there is something in this version later that we'll get to when we get there. That makes me kind of question, well, why is Marley still, you know, chained up, you know? Yeah. So, of course, you know, Marley's telling him that, you know, dude, you're in for it. Because, mm-hmm. you were just as bad as me. And you've had 7 more years to you know, lengthen your chain, you know. It's a ponderous chain.
Yes.
And, you know, and of course he tells him that spirit never roamed beyond our clearinghouse.
Yeah. So now he's doomed to wander.
Yeah.
You know, incessant torture, remorse.
I mean, Michael Horton here is, he's laying it on pretty thick, but, it works for the character because, you just get this idea that it's just, I mean, he's living in a perpetual hell.
Right.
You know, so of course he's going to be,
bit more unhinged.
Yeah, he's not going to be like, hey, dude, man, you know, look, if you don't change, you're going to end up just like me. I mean, he's not going to be like that, you know.
Right.
He's going to be just, you know, I mean, he's been like this for 7 years. So, I mean, you can understand why he would act the way he did.
It makes you wonder, you know, was Jacob visited by 3 spirits and he turned them down and then he's decided to come to Scrooge. You know?
I don't know. You know, here he says it's a chance through his procurement. So somehow, and I've always wondered, like, you know, how did he work that angle? But you really, I mean, Marley must have, I mean, even though Marley was apparently an SOB just like Scrooge, he must have really fought a lot of Scrooge as a friend because he went out on a limb for him here.
Right.
You know, it's like, dude, I'm going to get these 3 guys to come see you. They're busy, but they're going to take time out of their day to come try to
save you. This part where it shows all the people who have died and, you know, everything else, and then they're coming after that woman and her baby, you know.
They're trying to help her. I mean, they're trying to, you watch, they're trying to interfere for good and human measure. See, if you watch them, they're trying to, like, give her warmth and, you know, do something to help her, and they can't.
Right, but, you know, that's what I'm saying,
yeah.
You know.
No, I know, but, I mean, I don't know how many, it looks like the Haunted Mansion. I mean, there's so many, and now Marley's down there with them, and Scrooge is just, I love the look on his face, like, I can't believe I'm seeing this, and this the wailing sound and the music. The music goes with the wailing. I mean, I love the soundtrack of this film. It's wonderful. He's running for cover, man.
In his slippers.
In his slippers. He's going to dive. He dives into his bed and pulls his bed curtains around him. I would too, man. I don't blame him. After I saw that, it's bad enough to see one ghost, but you look outside and see about 30 ghosts hanging outside your window. But the bad thing is there's still some poor old woman, I guess she's not old, she's got a young child, a poor woman outside freezing to death on Christmas Eve. That's pretty awful. But now the Ghost of Christmas Past here is the one that varies the most from version to version.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Marley's always Marley, and the Ghost of Christmas Present's always, you know, pretty much he's like a
jolly fellow,
a jolly Father Christmas type. And the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is a Grim Reaper type.
I was thinking Dementor.
Dementor, yeah, that's true too. But this one always is different. Now, this is similar to what was in the book, although the illustrations in the book, the original version of the novel, which I should have looked up who did those illustrations. I know, but I can't think off the top of my head right now. Don't have those notes in front of me. But they showed a figure like that was literally like shimmering, like had multiple hands and which they interpreted on that animated version we watched last night that had Alistair Sim. And that's the other thing I meant to mention is that Michael Hordern that played Marley, he did the voice in that as well.
Okay.
So they reunited as Scrooge and Marley.
Quite a few of the cast.
For that animated version. And that was actually produced by Chuck Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys, it's like 25 minutes. It's out on YouTube. And it's really well done. And it's, I remember being kind of scared of it when I was a kid. Because there's some really creepy parts of it. It looks,
right.
And it looks like it's literally an illustrated storybook animated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, there's a ton of like intricate line work in it. But yeah. So yeah, the ghost offers him to, you know, let's go out the window. And he's like, but I am mortal. I'm like to fall.
I mean, in this one, he looks, you know, I don't know. I always thought of this as him being, he kind of looks like he walked off the Star Trek set. You know, the one, yeah, there's something about him. I don't know.
He's got that kind of, you know, he's got this kind of Grecian look about his outfit, which mm-hmm. is kind of strange, but yeah. And
then you got the one where she's dressed as a lady, a proper Victorian lady, and then you've got it.
The Finney version, yeah.
And I mean, you know, you've got that one, and then you got, you know, all these different versions. One that's just light.
Yeah, the Jim Carrey, mm-hmm. Robert Zemeckis animated version. It's literally a flame. It's basically like a living candle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Past has taken Ebenezer to his boyhood school. And he's the only boy left there as his family, his father, does not want him to come home, so he boards at the school at Christmas, the only child there. Which is just awful. Now, this is the actor here's George Cole that's playing young Ebenezer, and we discussed him. He was the father in The Vampire Lovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was the father of the victim that Ingrid Pitt was after in the Vampire Lovers. He was a big British actor. You know, in addition to that, him and Michael Hordern were both in one thing I love, the Disney Scarecrow of Romney Marsh episodes that were part of the Wonderful World of Disney, Wonderful World of Color, whatever you want to call it, and it was re-released as a film, Dr. Sin, alias the Scarecrow. And he played one of the Scarecrow's men, one of the other ones that actually wears a mask, Mr. Mips, that was called Hellspite. He was the skull-faced guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great. It's unfortunately not on Disney Plus. You got to buy a Blu-ray to watch it. But I highly recommend that series. It's got Patrick McGoohan
mm-hmm.
as a Scarecrow from The Prisoner and Danger Man. And it's just I love that. I watched it again just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, here we establish, it's a little bit different in this version. Scrooge's sister comes to finally fetch him and bring him home. This version posits that Ebenezer's mother died in childbirth, giving birth to him.
Yes.
Usually he's older than his sister, but for whatever reason, the dad doesn't like him, you mm-hmm. know. But here it gives a reason why the dad doesn't like him. It's still awful, but, you know, he basically blames his son for killing the mother in
childbirth. And as Christmas, the Ghost of Christmas Present makes sense here, you know, he's like, you hate, you know, Fred for the same reason that your father hated you.
Right.
You know, which is awful.
Exactly, yeah. Because we'll see, and we'll actually see that scene later, that his sister there, Fan, dies in childbirth, giving birth to Fred, and the cycle continues because Ebenezer does not try to help take care of Fred, and just his entire life apparently just, you know, just pushes him aside. It makes you wonder, why does Fred even bother, you know, still come around? But now we're at a scene
at Fezziwig's.
You always have to go to Fezziwig, and here we see Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig dancing, and Of course, you know, they can't see old Scrooge and the ghost there, but Scrooge is getting into it. You know, he's kind of bouncing to the music,
yeah.
and the ghost is kind of throwing him into his face. It's like, well, what, you know, why does he deserve your praise? It's like, he didn't spend that much money on this. And Scrooge is like, oh, the happiness he gave us to the clerks and the apprentice, it was as if it cost a fortune.
And then he's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, man, I really do treat Cratchit like shit.
Don't I?
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing I really do like about, I think Alistair Sim, more than just about any other Scrooge, really does put across the change that it slowly works on him, you know, throughout the night. Or I guess technically it's supposed to be multiple nights, and then we find out it's one night. Now here his betrothed, his fiance, the woman that becomes his fiance, is called Alice. She has different names and
different iterations, yeah.
But you know, it's always the same. They meet when he's young and poor and working as a clerk for Fezziwig, and you know.
And in some versions, she's Fezziwig's daughter.
Yeah, that's in the Finney version. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in the Finney version. Yeah,
and I think in the Mickey Mouse version.
Yeah, probably so.
I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. When she was portrayed by Daisy Duck.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do like Mickey's Christmas Carol.
I do too.
And you know, and I had a record album when I was a kid.
I remember you telling me that.
That
now.
Came out several years before the actual animated version. The record, I mean, you know, because when the movie version came out, I'm like, oh, I've already seen this. I have the storybook with the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. Now this here is a new addition. They greatly expand the Ghost of Christmas Past segment here. In fact, it's actually pretty long. And this is Jack Warner, who apparently was a pretty big British star that was under contract to the Rank Corporation, who actually helped distribute Hammer films later. He plays Mr. Jorkin here. And Jorkin's basically trying to get Fezziwig to modernize.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all new to this movie. This is not in the original novel, you know. But I mean, it helps fill in the backstory. You know, Ebenezer's, you know, listening to all this, and you just get the idea that he's like, wow, you know, I like Mr. Fezziwig, but he's really blowing it here.
Yeah.
He said this is a great opportunity for him, and this is where the opportunist comes in. Fezziwig, I think this guy here is just called Fezziwig's lad, I believe. Another version, I think he's called Dick something or another. But I don't think they give that guy a name. This version. And now Mr. Jorkin's, you know, going to ask Scrooge what he thinks about it, which, you know, you can't teach a leopard to change its spots. And you know, Scrooge says, well, I think I know what he means by it. But they have a nice little discussion, but you can see that Jorkin's trying to basically, you know, he knows he's not going to get anywhere with Fezziwig, but he might with this young guy here.
Right.
Yeah. So I like that bit. I mean, it helps flesh the characters out, and it helps make the change real. You kind of understand, you know, why Scrooge went down the path he did with scenes like this. And that's another reason why I you know, prefer this version, you know, over... I mean, there's very few versions. Now, there was a version that was on TV last year with Guy Pearce and Andy Serkis that apparently was just really just out there and real mean-spirited. And I didn't see it, guys. So if you saw it and liked it, I apologize. But people told me about it. I have no desire to watch that movie. It totally, from what I understand, it totally misses the point of A Christmas Carol. You know, that uplifting ending that you can, you know, that you should, you can change and you know, that the season can, you know,
mm-hmm.
work its magic on you. But now we're here with
Fan
on her deathbed.
Right.
And
her childbirth bed.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's promised you what, Fan? You know, there's not going to be any need. He's refusing to believe that she's going to die. But, He's really like, you know, at this point, this must be the only family he's got left. You get the idea that their father must have passed away. And I guess, you know, he probably still was never very close to him. But
I'd like to know what happened to Fan's husband.
Yeah.
Because I mean, he's never mentioned, I don't think.
You see him, that's him standing there, I suppose. That's got to be, you know, which it's interesting that, you know, Ebenezer was there at her bedside when she died, not him. But, and you hear Fred cry, and Ebenezer just gives him a look.
Like, how dare you be alive and my sister not?
And he shoves his brother-in-law away, just like, get away from me, you know. And you get the idea that that things probably never got any better between them, you know. And Scrooge's like, how could you ever brought me here? Don't you have any mercy? And she's not quite dead yet. And she actually asked for Ebenezer.
Again.
Yeah, to look out. Promise me you'll take care of my boy.
Yeah.
And he never heard that until now. And this is only in this version as well. I mean, wow, what a gut punch for him, you know, to find out that, you know, all these years, you know, your sister wanted you to watch out for your nephew, and you treated him like crap, just like you were, you know, and...
That's what gets me. He had undergone the same treatment that he dished out.
But, I mean, that story's old as, you know, people don't rise above what happened to them, they just repeat it. You know,
a lot of times.
So, yeah, I really love that addition. It's really well done. And I mean, poor Scrooge is, I mean, you feel sorry. I mean, you already feel sorry for him because he's crying there. I mean, that's the thing, you feel for the guy right from the get go. Now, this is a young Patrick McNee here as Marley, as young Marley, and Patrick McNee will go on to be in that. Tons of stuff, but he's John Steed in the Avengers with you know, John Steed and Emma Peel,
right.
The British Avengers. So yeah, and he was in James Bond films and different things, but he's in a ton of stuff. But this is him when he was, you know, very young. So,
and so he's got another clerk, and you know, he's meeting Marley, and Fizzywig let him go, just wished him well.
Yep, he's working. They're going to work for Mr. Jorkin now. So. Yeah, this is how Scrooge and Marley, this is the moment they meet. Yeah. Oh, one thing I thought interesting, you know, Scrooge now means a miser because of this.
Right.
But Scrooge in Dickens' time meant to squeeze. So I guess it makes sense. He literally, you know, held onto his money so tight. And he was, you know, what did he call him in the book? Like covetous old sinner or something like that, you know, which makes sense. He coveted what everybody else had, you know. Now, we're not seeing Mervyn Johns here, but I forgot to mention, because we saw Patrick McNee, Mervyn Johns actually appeared in an Avengers episode as a Dickens-obsessed man in an episode called Too Many Christmas Trees.
Okay.
So the two of them back together in a Dickens, you know, related Christmas story is kind of interesting.
Now we're seeing the Fizzywig sign coming down and Fizzywig watching.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Poor guy. You feel sorry for him. He just think, you know, his whole life is just, you know, going out the down the drain. Now, this part here really gets me. This shows you how much Scrooge has changed already. The guy that he used to work with at Fizzywig, may I stay on, Mr. Scrooge? What's your pleasant salary? So you can stay for 4 shillings a week when he was making, what, six?
Five.
Yeah. He reduced him by a shilling a week. Now, this is a guy that, you know, was his coworker and ostensibly his friend.
Right.
And he just didn't even consider it, said, yeah, we're going to knock you down to four, but you can stay. I mean, because they bought Fezziwig out, you know, and yeah. And Scrooge feels bad for a split second about it. And then, you know, goes on about his business. Yep.
Now we see Alice.
Yep. This is the scene. Now this is in every version. A lot of times they're in the park somewhere.
Yeah.
But here they're probably in her, I guess they're in her home. In the Finney version, she drops by the office. He can't even be bothered to look up from his ledgers.
Yeah.
Long enough for her to break up with him, to end their engagement. Yeah. And he, you know, he always asks, he's like, you know, well, did I ask to be released? You know, he's like, you know, I've not changed towards you. And she said, well, you've changed toward the world, you know. So, yeah, I mean, this, the evolution of Scrooge, I mean, this is a very, like we said, very lengthy Christmas Past segment, but I think it really is, you know, I mean, other versions you just take, you know the story so well you take for granted, but this version, like, really works on film, that it actually puts across. And I know I'm beating the same drum over and over again, but I did. That's just one thing about this that really impresses me. It really does. You really can buy that he went from where he was as a young man to where we found him at the beginning of the movie, and how seeing all this could actually, you know, open his eyes.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And I mean, she realizes that, you know, they're unequally yoked, as the saying goes, and
right.
You know.
Apparently, she was in some. You know, she was dour. Dowerless, she didn't have a dowry, and so, you know, that she was, you know, basically she was poor, and now he was, you know, wealthy, and that's what he, you know, she could have just kept her mouth shut and rode the gravy train, but she didn't, you know. Now, I, you know, when she, like right here, I will say, when she goes, she instantly just drops to the table and just, oh, you know, that.
But it's one of those cases. She kept her crap together while she was in front of him.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
She kept her poise.
She kept her crap. You don't lose your crap in front. When you have an altercation with somebody, you keep your, you do it in private. After he left, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. That's true. Now, this scene is most definitely not in any other version. We actually go back into the past, but not as far. Like, we're going to see in this scene, we actually see Scrooge and Marley younger, but now they're played by Alistair Sim and Michael Horgan here. You know, they've got a little more hair and not as much gray and white in their hair.
You know? You mean a little less hair?
A little less. Well, they got a little more hair than they do, well, Scrooge does, and we see him in the present.
Right. You know? Oh, okay. I thought, you know.
And basically what they're doing is the company's basically, got, Mr. Jorkin at a hearing where he's basically been, you know, embezzling money.
Right.
From the company. So, yeah. And I love his pinstripe suit. He looks like something out of a Tim Burton movie. He kind of looks like the bad guy in The Corpse Bride. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
He does. The one that she was supposed to marry. Yeah, most definitely.
It was voiced by, the guy from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah,
I can't think of his name.
I can't either, but
that guy. And we should know him, but he, that's who he looks like. He even looks like that guy. But I love how Scrooge is just like playing with his watch fob.
Yeah.
He's got his, you know, he's just like got this smug look on his face, and
they're just waiting for their opening.
Yeah. They're going to buy him out. They're going to buy him out lock, stock, and barrel to save the company, you know, to basically.
Cause he's got shareholders and, you know.
Yep, they're going to buy the company out, so his misdemeanors won't be made public and make the company look bad. You know, so I mean, these vultures have swooped in and basically taken the carcass away from the other vulture.
Yeah,
is what it amounts to. It they look so satisfied. It's like you know those two went off and schemed. It's like, well, you know what he's doing. It's like,
right.
And you know what we can do. We could sweep in and take this whole damn thing over.
Right.
And Marley never...
Because as his clerks, they probably found out. And I kind of wonder if they didn't blow the whistle on Jorkin to set him up.
Well, they could have. And I kind of wonder at this point if they're not partners. Like, they've risen into being a... Instead of just being clerks. Like,
oh, yeah, but, you know.
Partners into the... Yeah, but they're probably more aware of the actual bookkeeping. And Marley doesn't even ever say anything. He just darts his eyes back and forth, but he's got this look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And these old and fussy dudes are like, "You're out of order, Mr. Scrooge," and all this. And they just, They just got the,
and they just look at each other like, we got you by the hey nanny nannies.
Yeah, boy. It's like, yep, it's all ours now.
I mean, they don't have any choice,
nope,
you know?
Nope, nope. Now, this is another, I mean, again, I keep saying that. This is a scene you don't see very often. Now, this is where we first meet Mrs. Dilber,
mm-hmm.
Who's second billed in this film, which I never noticed that before till I was doing that.
Doing the notes.
It's like, wow, she's like, why isn't Mervyn Johns like the Bob Cratchit's second billed? She must have been a bigger actress in England than he was. And I think she, my understanding was she played these type of parts in pretty much everything. The old busybody type.
Right.
Surprised she wasn't in a James Whale movie. You know, she could be a Una O'Connor or something like that. You know,
or lived across from Samantha in Bewitched.
Yeah, that same thing. Yeah.
You know, Mrs. Cratchit.
Yeah. Now we're 7 years in the past now because we're seeing the night that Jacob Marley dies.
Right. So we've come forward quite a bit.
And Mrs. Dilber is come to see Bob Cratchit's working for Scrooge. So the poor guy's worked for him for over 7 years. I don't know if it ever says how long he did. He's like, he's dying. Well, what can I do about it? If he's dying, he's dying. It's like, this is his best friend. And he's still busy just like counting money.
It's 4:45 and he'll go at 7 o'clock, which is another 2 hours and 15 minutes away.
Yeah. They come to tell him your best friend's dying. I can't leave right now. It's not, he'll come at 7. I'll try to get Mr. Marley to hold out till then, I'm sure. Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
I love Mrs. Dilber pops her head back in and wishes him a Merry Christmas, despite the situation. Because it's Christmas Eve.
Right.
7 years ago, because he died this very night. And, you know, it's not even 5 o'clock. Like you said, it's 4:45. He's got to wait 2 hours and 15 minutes,
right?
You know, before the Scrooge is looking at his, he looks at his watch, and yep, he's gonna look at his watch. He's counting his money. He's putting it in his bag. I mean, it's just, you know, you're. I mean, wow, your best friend, the guy that the only friend you got,
right,
is dying, and you just, I mean, if this doesn't show how far he's sunk, you know, I don't know what does. Yeah, and yeah, I hope you find Mr. Marley well, sir. I don't find that likely.
Now, this is something that I think is very telling in that look at the scarf difference between, you know, Scrooge and Cratchit.
Yeah.
You know, Scrooge has a very thick, you know, scarf, whereas we saw with Bob Cratchit earlier, his is real skinny, but it's longer, you know.
Yeah, it's thin. It's his outfit just doesn't look as... You know, well, he can't even buy a good, he can barely buy probably the type of clothes he needs to wear in the presence of that guy because the guy didn't pay him well.
Right.
But that scene was almost verbatim what we saw earlier where he was helping Scrooge out the door. And there's the Undertaker at the top of the stairs. That's not ominous at all. And if this doesn't look like something out of a horror movie, I don't know what does.
Well, the thing about it is, and I mean, this has been the case quite a bit. It was not uncommon because there were quite a few Undertakers for them to wait. They'd hear and they'd be like, just waiting.
Yep. Now this Undertaker here.
Ours is a highly competitive, you know.
Yeah, profession. This Undertaker here has major horror cred. This is Ernest Thesiger, who was none other than Dr. Pretorius. In Dr. Pretorius! In Bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
You know, the wonderful, wonderful Dr. Pretorius, who, you know, all but steals that movie.
Yes! Oh my gosh, yes.
And he also was in The Old Dark House, too, both by James Whale. And here, you know, Scrooge is coming in to see Marley. Now, this is the part I wanted to get to. You know, he's asking him, you know, they give me your last rites and all that. You know, That's what you want to say to your friends. Well, there's nothing I can do, huh? I mean, he literally says that. There's nothing I can do, And Marley's like, yeah, there's something you can do. He nods. Now, this part here kind of opens up some questions. Because he actually says, there's still time. You know, Scrooge asks him, well, what time for what? He said, we were wrong. So he's actually repentant.
I know.
On his deathbed.
I mean, it makes you wonder.
Why is he so? I mean, if you guys don't, you know, non-Christian beliefs aside, if you're a Christian and you're repenting on your deathbed, usually that means you're off the, you know, you're off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know some different denominations.
Or at least some.
Different denominations, different, you know, different actual, you know, doctrines that you follow might differ. But usually, you know, here Marley's actually, you know, he's telling him to save himself.
Right. I mean, he's trying, you know, again.
Now, he didn't do anything to make better, but he realizes it at the end.
Right.
So you get the idea that in this version of the story, no, it isn't enough to just say, oh, dude, I was so wrong all these years. No, you got to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have enough time to do something about it. Which, you know, spoiler warning, of course, Scrooge does. But you know, and Scrooge is a little freaked by what he said and, you know, the fact that he died, but just a little bit. And she's like, you know, you were right. He's like, I always know the Ernest Thesiger.
About how long he had to live?
Yeah. Ernest Thesiger looks so old here, though. I mean, he was old in Bride of Frankenstein, and that was almost 20 years earlier. I don't know how old he was.
Right.
I didn't look that up, but yeah, he's, you know, the poor guy looked ancient back in 1935, but he's still great, you know. Now, this part here, the ghost is basically just like, look at your face while you sign the death registry. And he was his only heir, so he
right.
got his property. That's, well, when he walked in, that was Marley's home mm-hmm. then, but it's Scrooge's home now. He took his house, and he took all of his furniture and everything, and he's not even sad. He's just like, yeah, I just made bank, you
yeah.
know. And now we're finally through the Ghost of Christmas Past segment in this film.
I mean,
it's quite long.
Yeah, I mean, it takes you about through the halfway point of
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the other ghosts kind of get short-thrifted by comparison, but again, it helps set things up, and it fleshes the story out better than other versions, I think. Now we're getting the light underneath the door, of course.
Yeah.
You know, because you gotta have that to tell who's coming next. And Scrooge is just like, nah,
I'm good.
I'm just gonna go to bed and hope and just pretend like this is not happening.
Okay. And he's like, nah, man, come out here. I want you.
Yeah.
He's like, dang it, I'm coming.
Yeah. Yep, and we're about to meet the Ghost of Christmas Present, who is played by Francis DeWolf. I forgot to mention that Michael Dolan was the Spirit of Christmas. They call him the Spirit of Christmas here, not Ghost, but he's got all of his food around him. Not quite as elaborate as the Albert Finney version. But he's, you know, I love the look on Scrooge's face.
What?
He's just like shakes his head like, no, man, this ain't happening. Come on in, get to know me better, man. Yeah. Yeah, you've never seen the like of me before, have you? Well, no, he hasn't because
he's a giant.
Well, no, and because Scrooge doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Yeah.
You know? this character almost always has the same look.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the beard.
The big green robe.
He's got the big green robe with the white fur. He's got the
St. Lucia wreath.
Yep, on his head. I'm glad you knew what that was. You know, he's very much like an old school Father Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Early Santa Claus look in a lot of ways, which I'm sure.
Oh, and I just realized he's a very furry man.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The actor.
Yeah, he's always, you know, why didn't Prince Voltan from Flash Gordon? Why didn't he ever play?
Oh,
he should have
yeah.
been. He should have been the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Hail Flash!
Hail Flash! Scrooge is alive! Now this part here, they're flying through the air, but it's not. It's kind of like they're floating. It shows
yeah.
them in the clouds, and yeah, you know, they're not. It's not a super effect, but at least they're not doing something that they can't pull off. You know. Yeah. Now this is where we see the miners singing Christmas carols, like, they know me, and it just this just in the book. A lot of times these parts are left out, but this to show that people from all walks of life are celebrating Christmas.
Right.
Because you're going to get the poor celebrate Christmas, and later you'll go to Fred, who somehow is still pretty well off, despite the fact that, Ebenezer is disowned. Man, it's really snowing, ain't it?
Yes.
Everything really, like, super snowing. Now we got the famous scene of Bob Cratchit carrying not-so-tiny Tim on his shoulders.
Wonder if that hurt.
Yeah, I'd say it. So that kid's pretty big. He's not I don't know if he's a whole lot shorter. And it always gets me that Peter, the son Peter, has this humongous starched collar. And they mention it later that it's just one of his father's collars.
I know, but
it's
dang.
Like, it looks like he's got it on there to keep from biting himself. It's like the cone of shame, basically, you know. One of their daughters is, I guess she's older and out of the house and has a job, and Martha is her name. Martha, where's Martha? He's upset because she's not there, but she doesn't stay hidden too long.
No, yeah. She's like, I ain't going to do that to my
daddy. Yeah, I ain't going to pull that on Dad too long. You know, Dad's grief, got enough grief in the world without me pulling a fast one on him. But, of course, the thing with the Cratchits is they're poorer than dirt. But they, the fact that they all love one another and they're happy. And
they need a radio.
Yeah. It's 1843.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
There's no radio.
Well,
they need something. Read a book. Quit having kids. And then you won't have to worry about feeding as many.
Oof.
And of course, this is where he talks about he took Tiny Tim to church, and
yeah,
and he said, on Christmas Day, it's good that they think the who let made blind men see and lame men walk. He's trying to convince Martha and Mrs. Cratchit that Tiny Tim's growing stronger, but Mrs. Cratchit can't quite feign that she believes him. And
she's like, sure, honey, sure.
Yeah, and Scrooge said, will Tiny Tim live? And the famous line, I see a vacant seat in the corner and a crutch carefully preserved.
Without an owner.
Yeah, without an owner. If the shadows aren't changed, the future, that's what the future will be. And, of course, Scrooge is, why can't you spare him? And then he throws a line at him. If he'd be like to die, it'd be better to do it and decrease the surplus population.
And he looks at him real quick like, what?
Yeah. Oh, boy, just woo, when you turn somebody's words against them like that. Wow. I mean, that scene's much more subtle than in other versions, because some other versions are like, give you a music sting, but all you need to get is Alistair Sims' buggy eyes, like, extra bugging out and turning to him like,
Yeah.
And they're always talking about the pudding. At least I don't know if this is the version. This isn't the version where they fondle all over the goose.
It
is later. It might be the version where they do, but there's different versions where it's like, you guys are going to eat that. Let's not, like, paw all over. I know it's going to be cooked in the oven, but,
ew.
It's kind of gross. No wonder everybody died of, like, the Black Death and shit like that back then.
Now, when I make the turkey, I rub the butter in,
Well, I know, but you wash your hands.
Of course.
You don't just, like, we don't all, like, when we get the turkey out, like, let's go all grope the turkey, Now, here, I always wondered, in this version, Bob Cratchit's found Peter a job.
Yeah.
But I wonder who's it with. It's obviously not with Scrooge. So it makes you wonder, where he found him a job. Yeah, and he mentions his collar. It's like.
And I mean, he's like 14.
Benedict Cumberbatch called. He wants his cape back, dude. I mean, geez,
Yeah.
He's going to get 5 shillings weekly or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So he's going to make more than that guy did. Of course, that was
20, 30
years ago by this point. So, yeah. God bless us, everyone. Yeah.
The famous line.
Yeah, Tiny Tim's got to say his line. That's his line. Even Scrooge smiles a bit and he says, "I give you Mr. Scrooge, the fan of the feasts and the family." He's like, "Oh no, Dad, no,
no, we don't,
not that son of a bitch, no."
Chris.
Sorry. But I mean, you know, that's what it's like. Oh, do we really have to toast him? And boy, the Mrs. Cratchit gives it to him, buddy. You know, it's like, you know.
Well, and that's one of those cases. I mean, I'm like that with you. I mean, I, you know, somebody comes at you, I was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the same way. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I'll drink to his, you know, for the holiday, not for him. But, you know, we'll do it in the spirit of Christmas. And let's, yeah, and they all kind of begrudgingly toast him.
Sure, whatever, Dad.
Fine, yeah. Now we're at Fred's house at his Christmas party, and this is, you know, this is a scene that you know, you always get, and they're all, and Uncle Scrooge always comes out, and I like how amongst the well-to-do, Scrooge is a well-known character.
Yeah.
He's a butt of the jokes, you know, it's like, he's the local town a-hole, basically.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, well, and I think what it is he's bougie. You know, he's not one of the gentry. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps, and I think it probably annoys them that, you know, you've got somebody that has money but doesn't have a title or anything like that.
Well, I never thought about that. I always just got the impression that because these folks are all, I mean, you can tell by the way they're dressed in the house that Fred has. He has a maid we see later.
Mm-hmm.
He's well off. And all of his friends seem well off. I just got the impression that, you know, they're well off, but they're not jerks, you know. But
yeah.
Scrooge is just this old stingy. I mean, you know, towns have people like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's the old crank that lives, you know, he's down the street. He owns this business. I hate doing business with him, but he's the only guy in town. You know,
right.
That type of thing. And they, you know, basically dog Scrooge and dance. And then this is a scene we get in some versions, not very often.
No.
This is Alice, and she's basically working at what's more essentially a homeless shelter.
Right.
You know.
Helping the poor out on Christmas Eve.
And she brings some soup to this old lady who tells her it's the best Christmas she ever had. And, of course, Scrooge is like, it's Alice, you know. And Alice is actually played by the same actress with just some gray in her hair.
Right.
So she's aged much better than Scrooge because he sure don't look like George Cole anymore.
No.
That just tells you what bad living will do to you.
Because
mm-hmm. He looks like hell. Now, I thought this was the part where she ran through him, but she don't do that in this version. That was something else. We missed that. That was when I think the sister came in. But, he tells them they're real, but they're shadows. But it makes you wonder, now that Scrooge knows where
right.
she's at, is he going to go look her up?
That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, does he go, you know, or is she married? Is she, what? She probably was married. Maybe she's widowed now.
Or maybe she gave up on love because of him, and she's a spinster.
Yeah, maybe. And, now we have the scene here where the ghost is about to leave him, Scrooge is saying, "I don't know if I can change or not." And he says, "Well, then
this part is the part that creeped me out when I was a kid when he shows
ignorance and want."
Yes,
yep, yeah. Beware, they cling to me for protection. Yeah, this part's left out of a lot of versions, and then there's some versions where they're just really frightening. But the little girl looks like. I mean, she's got huge bags under her eyes, and
yeah, I know. I mean,
they're basically
just—they're
dressed in rags, and they look really thin. And are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
And now he's throwing his words back at him again.
Again, yeah. But you know, he said, you know, beware them both, but beware this boy. Boy, do we know? Beware ignorance.
Uh-huh.
If 2020 has taught us anything, beware ignorance. And now we get the scary guy.
Yeah.
He's
like, oh, no.
Yeah. Just the hand. This guy never speaks. This was the guy you can't pronounce. Seslaw, whatever his name was. Not to be, you know, throw off at all on him.
Why don't you spell it?
Seslaw Konarski. I think that was the name of the vampire in the Night Stalker.
No, oh, yeah.
No, it was Janus something, but no. Yeah, he... he's just a hand right at the moment, but Scrooge is like, I cannot change, I can't. It's not that I am impotent. I just can't. It wouldn't be better if I just went home and went to bed.
You know.
Because, dude, you're kind of freaking me out. I don't think I can do this one. You know, I'm kind of, it's been a rough night, and I'm just kind of done, you know. So this, I mean, here, this is, he's a completely shrouded figure. I mean, it's just basically a black sheet over him. It's not even a hood. It's just, he's like a wraith, you know.
Yeah. A Dementor.
A Dementor, yeah.
Who works with Hermione.
Yeah, now, you can see his face through that sometimes, and that's I don't know if that's, you know, was intentional. It might be a case of where they've cleaned this up.
Right.
You can see it more. I don't remember as a kid seeing his face, but, you know, in this version, and there's probably like a better, even better cleaned up version on Blu-ray now, which I wouldn't mind owning, but I don't have it, so. But now we're at the Cratchit home, and Peter's reading from the Bible while Mrs. Cratchit is sewing, and the children wait for Bob to come in, and of course, we know he comes in alone. And there's the crutch.
Yep.
Carefully preserved in the corner, just as the Ghost of Christmas Present said it would be. Yeah. You notice Peter's got on a normal collar.
Yeah, now, one that fits him.
It fits him, yeah. Which I think's, you know, a nice touch. It's interesting. He's been working. He's had to buy himself his own clothes and not wear Dad's hand-me-downs to be presentable, probably. And they talk about, you know, that the only reason she's got tears in her eyes is because it's the color of the fabric.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, Bob Cratchit walks slower now that he used to walk very fast with Tiny Tim on his shoulder. I mean, this if this stuff don't get to you, I don't know what does, you know, with little Tiny Tim and in any version of A Christmas Carol. Bob's in. I mean, you know, there's some versions that, you know, Tiny Tim's body's still in rest up, laying in wait.
Like it had just happened. Yeah.
In his bed. I mean, including that animated version that's with Sim and
Porter. I went to see the place where he will rest.
Right, yeah. So he might, his body might still be upstairs, or it might be at the Undertaker, you know, but, yeah, it's either way. It's in some versions you get where he's already buried, and Bob Cratchit stops at his grave.
Grave, yeah.
That's in the Finney version, I believe, because you even hear his voice singing the song he sung earlier in the film, which is
creepy.
You know, yeah, well, it's
and heart tugging.
Heart tugging, not so much creepy, but yeah.
Eerie. There we go.
Eerie. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Ugh. Now we're going to take, he's going to take him to show, see something else. And, I forgot to mention, the editor in this film, as we transition from one scene to the next, good thing to mention. The editor in this film is a guy named Clive Donner. I don't think he's any relation to our friend Dick Donner. Yeah. But he later moved into directing, and he helmed two Dickensian TV films starring George C. Scott, Oliver Twist in 1982, and A Christmas Carol. He directed that version of A Christmas Carol, and he was the editor here. Now, that version vies with this one as a lot of people's favorite. And it is a very good version. I think it's probably number three for me of the traditional non-Disney, non-Muppet, which the Muppet Christmas Carol is very good, too. You know, the traditional takes that don't insert cartoon characters... Mr. Magoo.
Right.
It's probably number three. This being number one, Finney being number two, and George C. Scott being number three.
Yeah.
I don't like the Patrick Stewart version as much as I probably should.
I don't know. It's okay. But it's not,
I know Patrick Stewart loves it. He did, you know, one man shows of it, readings of it. I mean, he's a huge fan of it, and that's great. I'm glad he got to do one. And, of course, we all love Patrick Stewart, but, you know, it just, yeah. Now, this guy here, Old Joe, is played by Miles Mallison, who we have seen on our show before. He was the Undertaker in The Horror of Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also Dr. Tobler in Brides of Dracula, the doctor that went with Peter Cushing to the house.
The old drunk
that took his fee. Because it's like, oh, can I add your fee to my bill? And he's like, of course. And, you know, that's him. Yep, that's him. And it's interesting, in that animated version, the old Joe character there looks just like him. He's got that, I mean, not to be that kind of rat-like face that he's got.
Right,
I mean,
that hooky nose.
That hooky nose. I mean, he was born to play the Penguin and never did, you know, basically. And we've got Ernest Thesinger again. Now, this is Mrs. Dilber and the Undertaker and the Laundress have all gathered, and they're basically all hawking stuff that they stole off of Scrooge's body or his home.
Yeah.
After he died. Now, Scrooge doesn't know that he's dead yet, but that's what they've done. Now, Howie didn't figure out that, wait a minute, that's my housemaid. You know, why is she here? Of course, maybe she's housemaid for other people, too.
Right, right.
But, because I don't get the idea that she just works for him. But I love how polite they are with each other about, you know, who's going to go first. And, you know, there apparently is some honor among thieves.
Yeah.
But they don't like the fact that apparently old Joe's really cheap. You know, yeah, 17 and 6. I always give too much to a lady. It's a weakness of mine, and she's angry about it.
Kind of like, well, whatever.
Yeah, you ask for another penny, might leave an open question. I regret me liberality.
Yeah.
Now this is the part that gets me. She pulled down his bed curtains. With him lying there?
Yep.
Wow. Now that, you know, I mean,
rings and all.
Rings and all. That just goes to show you what amount of respect they had for Scrooge.
Yep.
You know, they're like, basically, hey, this guy was a no good, you know what, so who cares? You know, he's getting what's coming to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And his blankets, too.
His blankets, too. You know, and I like, oh, Joe's like,
she took them off of him.
Yeah, didn't have anything catching, did he? And there's one more thing in here. The finest shirt that he was wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, she dressed him in
his bed shirt.
Yeah, she dressed him in something.
Nightgown, there we go.
Yeah, she dressed him in something else. Yeah. And if they buried him in this, of course. Yeah, so it must have been a nice shirt, like a nice. Like, you know, I don't think they would have buried him in his bed shirt, but it must have been like...
No, it was his nightgown. That was...
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah,
what?
That...
They buried him in a nightgown back
then?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't... I thought they would have...
Yeah, because they took the clothes and distributed them out.
Oh, okay. No, but I mean, he shouldn't have been buried in his nightshirt, right?
What they were going to do is he had a nice nightshirt. Oh. She took it off of him and put him a holy one. Yeah.
They put a holy one on him, yeah. Now... I'll always love this. We're back to the two businessmen at the gentleman's club or the stock market or wherever they're at.
Gentleman's club.
But they're talking about, you know, somebody died. It's like, well, the funeral won't cost much. That's certain. It's like, I can't think of anyone who'll go to it. I don't mind going if there's a luncheon provided.
Yeah. And he pats his belly.
Must be fed or else I stay at home. It's like, wow, dude. It's like, you know. He'll go as long as there's lunch. Like,
let's hope Scrooge was Baptist.
Yeah.
You got to have a casserole, man.
You got to have some casserole. Somebody's going to bake a ham. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's going to be, there's going to be a big ham. There's going to be tons of cakes.
Yeah.
Lots of pies. Yeah, you know, yeah. Yeah, my usual place is there under the clock. I ought to be there this time of day. I think Scrooge is in denial.
Yeah.
He's definitely in denial here that... That things aren't...
Him that bought it.
Yeah. I like this... yeah, that's
that transition,
that transition with his hand. And yeah, he looks very skeletal here, the ghost. This cemetery,
and now they're in the cemetery.
This cemetery is straight out of a Universal movie or a Val Lewton film. I mean, there's so many heavy shadows in this movie. It's got like a noirish kind of quality to it as well. I mean, this is after Lewton. And, you know, Universal Horror's been over for about 6 years at this point, other than Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein in their films. But, yeah, I mean, this is straight up straight up a horror scene right here. And Scrooge, I know that men's deeds, you know, but if the deeds be departed from, surely the ends will change. He knows it. He doesn't want to face it. He knows he's going to face it right here, but, you know, tell me it is so. You know, he's basically like, okay, you know, why would you show me all this if this isn't
right, know, if I don't have a chance.
If this isn't going to change anything.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I love his scream here, his wail, as he sees that the tombstone says Ebenezer Scrooge. And his shadow's across it, so you know he's reading it. And then he just falls onto it. And he knows that, you know, I mean, he's died and he's doomed to the same hell that
Marley's in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me I'm not already dead. you know, he thinks, you know, I mean, that's a thing that's often left out. It's like, you know, the fact that, okay, all this is going on. Am I dead? Is there
right,
no chance?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times it goes straight just where he jumps back up again. And he says right there, I repent. I do repent. I'll make good the wrongs I've done. I'll change. I'm not the man I was. And of course,
he falls to his feet, you know,
he grabs
pulling at his cloak.
And then of course he wakes up pulling on his bed curtains and the post of his bed here. Yeah. And this is the part where Alistair Sim blows everybody away. And
yes.
If he didn't blow everybody away in the other aspects of this movie, repentant, change Scrooge, nobody tops him. I mean, this, I love this part. I mean, this is the part that my family always, you know, we, you know, do the lines back and forth, and, you know, it's great. I'll have a hard time, like, actually talking over this because I'll get involved in it.
Yeah,
But, you know, he's woken up and he's, you know, he opens the door and there's Mrs. Dilber. And, you know, she doesn't know what's going on. Good morning, sir. What day is it? Yeah, it's Christmas Day.
And I mean, think about it. She had to get up, leave her family to come wait on him.
Yeah. Yeah. The spirits have done everything in one night because, you know, like in the book, they were supposed to do it over multiple nights, not just one, but they did it in one. Some versions, they said they're going to do it at one, then at two, then at three. And yeah, he looks himself in the mirror.
And she's like, ah, dude, you kind of crackers here.
Yeah, you quite yourself, sir? I don't think so. I hope not. What? The curtains are still here. He didn't take them down. She's like, I didn't take your curtains down. What are you talking about?
But hey, that is a good idea.
Yeah, man, what those curtains are bringing off. I wonder what old Joe gave me for those curtains. Yep. They can't. The shadows of things that can be, that can be dispelled, and they will be. I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. He's jumping around. I'm as happy.
Kind of skipping around here.
Skipping around on one leg. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. And he does something here in a minute. That's just, he wishes himself a Merry Christmas in the mirror. You old humbug.
He's kind of like, what?
A Happy New Year if you deserved it. Merry Christmas, Mrs. Dilber. Well, thank you, sir. And he knocks her, he actually knocks her over.
Knocks her down, yeah.
Just because he's running around like a nut. Yeah. And he's pointing out where everything was. There's the corners where the Spirit of Christmas Present sat. Door where Marley came in. She's like, what in the hell are you talking about, man? Yeah. I don't know how long I've been. He doesn't know how long he's been with the spirits, but I mean, it's Christmas Day, but
right.
Who knows what year it might be.
Right,
and he sings, I don't know anything, I never didn't know anything.
And now I don't. And, now I know that I don't.
And here he goes.
Any.
I must stand on my head. And he literally puts his head in the chair and stands on his head, and then Mrs. Dilber runs out screaming with her apron over her face.
Well, think about it. He's in his nightgown. If he does stand on his head,
she might get an eyeful.
Well, yeah, that's probably why she did that.
And he has to stop me. He has to stop her on the stairs, chase her down. I'm not mad. And then he sticks his hair up like all crazy. And makes him.
Don't be violent.
Yeah, you forced me to scream for the beetle. I think for the beetle.
Gave her some money.
Again, eh? What for? I love this part. I'll give you one guess. To keep me mouth shut.
Keep your mouth shut.
He's laughing. It's for a Christmas present. He's like, so, I mean, think about this guy. She's known him all those years, worked for him for at least 7 years since Marley died. Never given her a Christmas present. No kind of, I mean, heck, we give the mailman and the garbage man a Christmas present.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Of course you do. But I mean, this is his maid and he won't even give her that, you know. I say, how much do I pay you? 2 shillings a week. What, 2 shillings? It's hit forthwith raised to 10. So now she's going to make more than Peter does because he's making 5 shillings a week.
Oh, that's right.
I'm keeping track. And that one guy, of course, that like 30 years ago, he was making 4 shillings. He was making 5, then got reduced to 4.
4, yeah.
So, you know, she's ahead of everybody else. I'm just saying right now.
And she's like, woohoo, Merry Christmas.
And keeping with the situation. She's got that accent. I love this part. It raises the window. He looks out and sees the snow. Of course, it's snowing. And, yeah, what a beautiful morning. Yeah, there's snow everywhere. Hello there. Hello, you. You, boy. You.
And that little boy's like, oh?
Who, me? Yes, you. That's just something stuck. And that's something we always do, me and my dad. Like, you, boy. You. An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy.
And then apparently there's a prize turkey and...
Not the turkey. The one biggest May! Yeah. Very well then, go and buy it.
And he's just like, ah!
No, wait a minute.
You're full of beans.
Yeah, exactly. Tell the butcher, bring it here. Come back with the butcher and I'll give you a shilling. Come back in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you half a crown. I don't know my British denominations of money.
Yeah, how much that is.
I don't know that. I'm sorry.
Well, and you also have to think that this is, you know, back in the 1800s. Yeah, so that makes, you know.
Victorian time, so I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, he's going to send it to Bob Cratchit. He's looking for a label. This version he doesn't dress as Father Christmas and go dancing through the streets and bring the turkey to their goose or turkey to Bob Cratchit.
And now they're reading it.
Well, she's like, 2 Porter Street, Camden Town. That's where Bob Cratchit lives. There you go.
Yeah.
So he just gave his address. So in case you're ever in England.
And look at London, they're like, oh.
Yeah, they're fondling all over it. They're holding it. Like, yeah, it's like.
Like a kid.
Put that thing down. You know? And Tiny Tim says, I think it might have been Mr. Scrooge. What made you think that? What would make Mr. Scrooge take such leave of his senses suddenly? And
it's
Tiny,
Christmas.
And Tiny Tim just says, Christmas? Yeah. Ah, this part's really sweet. Scrooge goes to, he's at Fred's door, you know, given what he saw in the vision ahead, and the maid answers the door, and they're in there playing, I can't really hear it that well, but I think they're playing Barbara Allen right now.
I think so.
Yeah, and that played.
There was a fair maid dwelling.
Yeah, and that's the song that they played for his sister. That was kind of like, implied that was her song too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, kind of, that's really nice that they, you know, that they're basically the threads of the family are being pulled back together because Scrooge has finally, you know, gotten over his insane, you know, the reason he couldn't stand his nephew, you know, basically that. I love the little maid gives him like, yeah, she just looks.
She's
looks,
like, go on.
Go on. She never says anything, but she just gives him this look like, Yeah, it's okay. You can go in because they're having their Christmas party, you know, their dinner, their party, and in walks Scrooge and like the whole
it's just like a screech.
Uncle Ebenezer. Yeah, too late to accept that invitation to dinner. And this is the first time he's meeting his niece-in-law his niece, I guess you'd say.
His niece-in-law.
Yeah, his niece-in-law. And he begs her forgiveness, you know.
Yeah.
Because he did not approve of their marriage because, you know, Fred says that about them, you know, not being rich, basically, but they look pretty well off to me, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But who knows? Maybe she had a big dowry.
Yeah.
You know?
Fred's so hippie. She says hippie. Yeah. So very hippie.
And all she wants is her husband to be happy.
Yes. Yep. And they get him to play a polka, so they're going to get old Scrooge to dance right off the bat. She's going to get him to dance with her. It's like, well, that's a huge step from, like, you know, being an old curmudgeon to, like, you walk in the door and then you start dancing. But old Scrooge can cut a rug, man.
Yeah.
He had all those fezziwig parties. He knows how to dance. He remembers. He's good.
They're like, oh, okay.
Wow, Uncle Scrooge can dance.
Get it?
Yeah. He's going to start doing flossing and...
the dab.
Doing the dab here in a minute and all that stuff. All those dances were so old.
Those are
a couple years old. We have no idea. Our kids would be like, oh my God, do you realize how...
Out of touch, you
are now. I love, this is another great part. Scrooge rushes in to get there early the next morning. I make sure he's there before Cratchit.
And make it look like he's been there.
Yeah, they'll make it look like he's been there for a while. And Cratchit, he's walking fast. He hears the bell of the... He's like, oh man, I'm late.
He's already trying to get his
He's taking his scarf off and his hat so it looks like he's been there for a while too. And he's like, I'm going to slowly open the door and sneak in here. Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, crap.
Yeah. Ooh,
I'm going to sneak this in.
If I was him, I would just have put it at my desk and just, you know, not made. I wouldn't even have went past him because he's past the door. Cratchit, you're late. Oh, and the look on Cratchit's face.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you mean by coming in here this time of morning?
You know, the time of day.
I'm behind my time, sir. You are indeed. Oh, and he's calling him into his office. That's not good. It's only once a year, sir. It won't be repeated. Making rather merry yesterday.
Yeah.
Might be a little hungover, just a little bit. You know?
That's what I think, too.
Christmas punch. Yeah.
He's like, we're not going to beat around the bush.
I'm not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. Leaves me no alternative. To raise your salary. And he's like,
what?
What? And I love how Scrooge gets all tickled. He just...
He's like, yeah, man.
He's loving it. And he has to tell him, I haven't taken leave of my senses, Bob. I've come to him. Yeah. And he tells him, from now on, I want to try to help you raise that family of yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you'll let me.
Right.
Yeah, right. Say, we'll talk it over later, Bob. You know, over a hot bowl of punch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it tells him to go put some coal in the coal scuttle. You know, because just put some coal on that fire because it's, you know, you start letting him freeze to death all the time because he's so cheap.
Exactly.
He's going to go buy a new coal scuttle.
You got to think, this is Christmas in London. It's cold.
There's snow everywhere. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like, yeah. No, Scrooge just... I love it. I love this little bit here. He's just like, and he even comments on the fact, oh, I don't deserve to be so happy. You know? Yeah. But he just can't help himself. He can't help it.
He's giggly.
He's just, he
throws his pants down. Screw it.
Oh, okay, yeah. And of course, the narration tells Scrooge was better than his word. He became as good a master and as good a man as a good old city ever knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. And to Tiny Tim, who lived and got well again, and he gives a coin to some money to the blind and pets the dog, he became a second father. And then Tiny Tim comes, and it was always
calls him Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah, Uncle Scrooge. They knew how to keep Christmas. If any man alive possessed it, may that be truly said of us in all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Yep.
And they walk off in the snow, and that's just. That's the best, man. I mean, you guys might differ, but in my opinion, I don't know. Which one's your favorite? I didn't even ask you.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many different ones. I mean, I don't know. This one is one. It's up there.
Yeah. I mean, if I think of, you know, because I think of the Albert Finney one as a musical, it's a different experience, mm-hmm. You know, and. I think of
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
sorry.
Of course. I think of that one as like, you know, I've got to watch this one and Albert Finney every year.
Yeah.
Before Christmas. If I don't, I mean, many times I've watched them on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because during the day, we'll do Christmas Eve, open our presents from one another in the morning, our family here, and then we'll basically have the rest of the day here and just kind of chill. And then we go over to my dad's for Christmas Eve. Your mom's and then my dad for Christmas Eve.
Right.
And we'll eat little snacky foods and things that night. And then we'll have Christmas dinner the next day. But, in that downtime in between, if I haven't watched those two, I have to.
Right.
I have to watch them. And it's just, you just have to. But, you know, this one, I do think... Now, like I said, the one that was on last year is probably way more horror-centric than this one. But, again, it's just not...
I think it's too far afield.
Yeah, I think it's just too... It's too far from what I want the... You know, it just takes the story and goes in a direction that I don't want it to go in. But I just feel like this one, you know, it's... The horror elements are there. I mean, a modern horror film, no, but it does, it does have moments and horror elements that match the horror films of the day.
Right.
Of the 40s, of the early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that transition period, a pre-Hammer horror film.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it feels a little Universal, it feels a little Val Lewton, it's just really well done, obviously Alistair Sim, I mean, like I said, he came back and reprised the role and he's on, most people's lists of top guys that ever played the part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no shortage of people that played the part. Another version that we watched again for the first time in years, and I don't know if you'd ever seen it, a little strange version, is an American Christmas Carol.
With Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
That was actually made toward the end of Happy Days. Like mm-hmm. in the early, like late 70s, early 80s, like
right.
79, 80, 81. And it used to air quite a bit in syndication. And I like that one because it took place in Depression era
mm-hmm.
America. Like, he's really good. And of course, they got a lot of old age makeup on it.
Right.
But there's a lot of past scenes in that one too, because that way you'd have young Henry Winkler,
mm-hmm.
So it makes sense. But I really like that one. It was nice to see it again. I hadn't seen it in years, and that's a good one. And like we said, Muppet Christmas Carol, which is actually, I mean, a pretty good adaptation. And Michael Caine's a really good Scrooge.
Yeah.
Of course, you can see Michael Caine playing Scrooge anyway. But I mean, the fact that he plays it so well against the Muppets,
yeah.
which can't be easy. You know, I mean, I know those guys are talented. As all get out, the Muppeteers and everything. But at the same time, it's, you know, the fact that you're interacting with felt, you know.
Right.
You know, and people that are, you know, underneath the floor, the
right.
humans that you're working with are underneath the floor, and then you're interacting with felt, they're moving around.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I could go on for days and days about different versions.
Okay, as far as animated Christmas Carol, what's your favorite?
Well, let's see. We've got you've got the Mickey's Christmas Carol,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol,
mm-hmm.
which that one's good. Rattleberry dressing, and then you got the Jim Carrey, which is also a Disney. The Jim Carrey, Robert Zemeckis directed mocap Christmas Carol, and then the one I talked about, the 71 version that was produced by Chuck Jones.
Right.
He didn't direct it. I can't think of the guy that directed it, but he produced it that had Sam and Hordern in it. I don't know. I know the kids really love the Jim Carrey one.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny's already watched it this year. And
yeah.
Andrew and I went to the theater and saw that one because we thought it might be a little too creepy for Danny when it came out because she was really little.
Yeah, she was
And it
little.
Is kind of creepy. I mean, the whole Jacob Marley thing in that where his jaw comes unhinged.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey is pretty much, he's like most of the characters. And then Colin Firth's a few characters and Gary Oldman's a few characters.
Mm-hmm.
He's Bob Cratchit. And it looks like Gary Oldman, but with like a lot less hair and, you know, like little short, like if Gary Oldman was really short and it's kind of straight. The only thing about those movies, and I don't dislike those movies. Some people are like, ugh, like Polar Express. And that one isn't quite as, doesn't try to be as photorealistic as Polar Express did.
Right.
But I enjoy watching the Polar Express with the kids and, you know, over the years. I don't mind it. But I like that version. It's pretty faithful, other than them filling the time out. Mm-hmm. You know, they fill there's that weird sequence where Scrooge is shrank down and chased by the black carriage through the streets. And that's really weird. There's some really weird things in that. There's some parts in that one where they go a little off the script a little much. I mean, this one does too, but this one embellishes what's there. That's just, but I don't know which version probably is my favorite. I mean, it's hard for me to say which animated version, because I like them for different reasons. I can't hardly choose there.
I can tell you which one I've got two that are probably my top favorite animated version of it.
What's that?
The Barbie Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
I like it. I honestly like it. They did a really good job with that. You know, where it was a female, where she was a singer. You know, I like that version. And I will unapologetically say that I like that version.
Yeah, I mean, we still got it. It was pretty good. I mean, I was surprised when I watched it, because I mean, it's a movie based on
a doll, yeah.
and nothing against Barbie, but Barbie, unlike other toys, she doesn't really have a storyline,
right?
So much, you know, like a set storyline. So
right, a definitive character history.
Right. But they, you know, they do a. It's actually really well done. It's a lot like those, you know, I don't know how many different Lifetime and Hallmark Channel movies there are of a female Scrooge now, you know.
Right. I mean, there's from All My Children, Erica Kane, Susan Lucci Susan version, Lucci, yeah. Where she was Ebby, and, you know, different ones like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would say either the Barbie or Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably Mickey's Christmas Carol. I mean, honestly, it's probably my favorite still, because, you know, I got a soft spot for it because, one, like I said, we had the record album with mm-hmm. the storybook, which I've still got. I think the book's missing a few of the first pages because I read it to death. But, you know, that kind of goes into my Power Records wheelhouse type thing. And then when they come out with the actual animated version, you know, you have to watch that every year. And I remember there were like little stuffed ones available at some fast food joint.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one it was. I don't know if it was McDonald's or Hardee's or Burger King, or it was one of those. But we've had those over the years. I probably like Mickey's Christmas Carol best. I probably do. But, well, there's actually, you know, there's no shortage of comic books mm-hmm. that riffed on A Christmas Carol. And we come back, we'll cover one of them.
There you go.
Hello there. Hello, you boy, you.
Who, me?
Yes, you. Do you know the butchers in the next street but one?
I should hope so.
An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Tell me, have they sold the prize turkey that was hanging there, not the little turkey, the big one?
Well, the one as big as me?
Yes. Delightful boy. Yes, my buck, the one as big as you.
It's hanging there still.
Is it? Very well, then, go and buy it.
Whoa, Kerr.
No, wait a minute. I'm in earnest. Tell the butcher to bring it here and I'll give him the name of the party he has to send it to. Come back with the butcher and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown. An enchanting boy.
And action! It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Okay, we're back, and we visited the comic crypt to pull out a Christmas-themed comic. A Christmas Carol has been the springboard for many comic takeoffs, as we said in the other segment. It was a bit of a challenge deciding which one to cover here to tie into our film. The most famous is probably Bob Haney and Nick Carty's The T.T. Swinging Christmas Carol from Teen Titans number 13, January-February 1968. Rob Kelly and I covered that one on Treasury Cast. because it was reprinted in limited collector's edition C-34. So I thought, well, maybe we shouldn't do that one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you didn't get to deal with Zany Haney again.
I'm good.
Then there's A Christmas Peril with Batman and Robin and A Young Scrooge from Batman number 27, January-February 1945, reprinted in My Beloved Best of DC Digest number 22, which was a Christmas issue. But that story is bereft of spirit, so, you know.
And, you know, for House of Frankenstein, we need, you know.
You gotta, yeah, I mean, this one's not overly horror-y, but, you know, see. Outsiders number 5, March 1986, has the team pulling a Scrooge scam on a racketeer. But we'll leave that to Tim Price and Ashford Wright on their new Outcaster show, which covers the Outsiders comic series.
And there you go.
But thanks to an entry at the Times Union Comics Multiverse blog, I discovered a heretofore unknown to me Dickensian comic adaptation, and that's the story we're covering today. Special thanks to Rob Kelly for pointing me in the right direction to find this comic in the crypt as well. Marvel Holiday Special 2004 number 1 was cover dated January 2005, but it was on sale November 24th, 2004. So that makes sense.
It's actually in this century.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. A modern comic for us, even though it's like 16 years old at this point.
Oh, shush. Anyway.
It is. The cover by Cary Andrews is a festive image of Spider-Man wearing a Santa hat, swinging among fir branches and bells and ribbons. What did you think of this cover?
It's just kind of... And, you know, you've seen Spider-Man with a Santa hat on everything. It's just kind of, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. Know. I mean, it's well done, but it's just kind of blah. Didn't do much to me. But the story we're covering is Jonah's Holiday Carol. The writer was Tom DeFalco. Takeshi Miyazawa was the artist. Christina Strain, the colorist. Clem Robbins, the letterer. And Ralph Macchio was credited as Grinch, although I'm pretty sure that means he's the editor.
Daily Bugle, editor-in-chief and publisher J. Jonah Jameson grouses about the staff decorating for the annual holiday party and all the inconveniences that the season brings with it. Peter Parker points out that the only Christmas bonus he ever got was a key to the restroom, and editor Joe Robbie Robertson reminds Jonah he makes the staff pay for their own party. Jonah counters that he provides free soap and toilet paper for the restroom and the space for the party to be held in without charging them for utilities. How generous.
A staffer informs Jameson that there is a major disturbance on the docks, and when the editor turns to send Parker on assignment, he finds the young photographer already gone. Wonder what he's off to do. Jameson feigns wanting to check the TV in his office for news on a disturbance, but the staff realizes he's just off for his usual afternoon nap. Jameson lounges on the couch, flipping through the TV channels to find no news but countless holiday specials and movies. He dozes off to a broadcast of Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
And awakens to the sight of an unmasked Green Goblin hovering before him on his glider. The bound and chained Norman Osborn warns his old business partner that, like him, he will be destroyed unless he lets go of his obsession with money and power. Jameson, who thinks he's getting punked on a hidden camera, is told he will be visited by three messengers and that he must heed their warnings or meet Osborn's fate. Jameson just wants him to make an appointment next time he calls.
Outside, reporter Ben Urich calls into the office to warn the staff that the situation on the docks continues to worsen. The Avengers have assembled to meet the challenge of some strange energy bubble. Robbie then asks him if he might be able to get a quote from Captain America. In Jonah's office, the good captain appears before the snoozing publisher. Jameson is somewhat pleased to see Cap, the only masked hero, who he feels may actually be on the level. Captain America takes Jonah into the past to witness a happy childhood Christmas with his mother, and the giving of her favorite Christmas gift, a hat Jonah bought her with his paper route money.
Jameson again questions the reality of his situation and wonders if perhaps he has a brain tumor, but Cap shows him his childhood room, adorned with posters and comics of the Sentinel of Liberty and other mystery men of days gone by. Jameson admits he did once idolize the marvels of his youth, until a masked gunman murdered his first wife. They move forward to the last Christmas he spent with his wife and young son John. The following Christmas found John alone, staring out the window, waiting for his hard-working father to return home.
Jameson admits he could no longer celebrate the holidays, and Captain America empathizes with his inability to trust anyone with a mask. Jameson's demands of knowing the truth about these so-called costume champions prompts Cap to take him to a more recent Christmas, 2 years ago, when the X-Men saved New York from a plot by Magneto to swallow the city in a massive earthquake. Unaware of this event ever taking place, Cap tells Jameson the heroes sought not to panic the public for personal glory.
Jameson finds himself back in his office, greeted by the intimidating Rocky figure of Ben Grimm, a.k.a. The Thing, decked out in an elf's hat. In his own style, Ben shows Jameson how the Fantastic Four and their extended family celebrate the holidays this season. Jameson annoyingly admits he gets the message that costume clowns celebrate just like everyone else, and the two move on. This time, he lands in the home of his freelance photographer, Peter Parker. Inside, Peter's wife, Mary Jane, and Aunt May lament Peter is off on another assignment, forced to work on Christmas Eve by Jameson. Hearing this, Jameson reminds Grimm that he does provide the boy with a chance to make a living. Ben isn't impressed by his generosity.
The scene then shifts to the docks amidst the Avengers' battle with the Absorbing Man and the Wrecking Crew. Jameson fears for his safety, but Ben shows him that his employees are out risking their necks for him. Bulldozer plows through a large stack of heavy crates, with Peter Parker left amidst the falling debris. Ben pulls a legitimately worried Jonah away before he knows that Parker survived. He brings him to a bar named Ralphie's, which Jonah has never seen in his life. Inside, he finds a familiar face, his son John, lonely at Christmas since his father refuses to celebrate it with him. Outside of Jameson's office, Urich calls back in to report Spider-Man has joined the Avengers in their fight.
Jonah awakens once more, this time to find the bane of his existence, Spider-Man, hanging from his ceiling. Spidey tells Jonah he's about to give him a glimpse of his future, and the two swing off. They land before a monument built to the Avengers who gave their lives at the Battle of the Docks. Jameson asks about the fate of Peter Parker, but Spider-Man's silence says everything. At the Parker household, they find a deeply depressed Aunt May and Mary Jane, now her caretaker. Jonah regrets his treatment of Parker, but doesn't have time to dwell on it as Spider-Man takes him to the now empty offices of the Daily Bugle. Without Parker's photos to boost sales, Jameson was forced to sell the building to a condo developer.
Then they witness the Fantastic Four in battle with Dr. Doom and the Wrecking Crew and Daredevil fighting Dr. Octopus. With the Avengers gone, the supervillains up their game. Jameson's dream of a costumed hero-free New York was becoming a reality. Jonah then finds himself alone in an alley, refusing to believe anything Spider-Man warned him of. Walking back toward the office, a familiar voice asks him for spare change. Jameson turns to see the face of the vagrant, the face of his son, John Jameson.
A frantic, sweating Jameson wakes up in an empty office and bolts out into the bullpen. He finds that with the help of Spider-Man, the Avengers defeated the villains. Ben Urich is now polishing up the story, and Peter Parker has turned in some great photos. Jonah is so overjoyed to see the young photographer still among the living, he offers him a $10 bonus for tomorrow's front page photo. His jubilation continues when his son John arrives to spend their Christmas together, despite his knowing his dad will insist to be at the office. But Jonah announces a change of plans. Their Christmases will be different from now on. Robbie announces that the party caterer has arrived, and Jonah shocks his staff by announcing he will be picking up the entire tab this year.
Jameson enjoys the party, declaring it the best holiday ever. A man approaches, congratulating Jonah on his festive prowess. Jameson tells the young man he's always been a soft-hearted, giving soul. But Jameson is unfamiliar with this man. Is he a new employee, perhaps? The man responds that he is not a staff member, merely the caterer. He hands Jonah the bill. After a guttural, "Ah!" Jonah has but one response. "Bah, humbug." So what do you think of this one?
I mean, it's honestly kind of refreshing in a way. I mean, you know, with the Christmas Carol, it's supposed to be the person has a complete about face, da-da-da-da-da. Basically, he's going to go back to the same way he was before. He's, you know, he's like, you know, I had a little, you know, I had my day of being a nice person. I'm back to me.
I think the one thing that changes, he'll maybe spend, actually celebrate Christmas with his son. Yeah, that's what I got of it. I thought this was a lot of fun. I can't help but hear J.K. Simmons' voice throughout this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, meat, I'll send you some Christmas meat. You know, that's
exactly.
I trust my barber, you know. When I saw Tom DeFalco wrote this, I knew we were in good hands because he wrote The Amazing Spider-Man back in the 80s. He was Marvel's editor-in-chief for a decade. He co-created Spider-Girl, among other accomplishments. This guy knows these characters.
Okay, so good.
Now, Takeshi Miyazawa's art is very manga-influenced, which is honestly not my preference, but the storytelling is fine for the most part, and I don't dislike it. It's fine. He went on to have quite a career drawing Mary Jane comics as well as Runaways and Miss Marvel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. Jameson's first line is, "Bah!" And Peter off screen says, "Humbug." The next line is, "Humbug." I thought that was cute.
Because everybody knows that he's a grump.
Right.
You know.
Jonah says, "I hate this season almost as much as I hate a certain web-headed weirdo." That line will be used against him later by the Ghost of Christmas Present, Ben Grimm. Just like Scrooge's line about the surplus population famously is, which right. We pointed out. So what do you think about Jonah thinking he's being generous about providing soap and toilet paper?
I mean, unfortunately, there are employers like that out there. You know?
Soap and toilet paper, especially in 2020, that's a...
There you go.
At one time, that was a hot commodity, you know?
I mean, and it might be a come again.
Might come again, yeah, with all the numbers on the rise, so yeah. So Jonah falls asleep to a Christmas carol, and then everything he hears in the office feeds into what he sees in his dream.
Right, which, you know, honestly, that's how dreams work. It's the things that you have experienced, you know.
Yeah, I get that he's, like, not completely asleep. He's basically taking a power nap.
Right.
So he's, like, picking up when Robbie says, "Get a quote from Captain America," mm-hmm. he sees Captain America. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know where the thing came from. They don't really say that, but, you know, it makes sense.
But still, yeah.
Yeah. I won't even try to place this story in Marvel continuity. I'm assuming it works in the 2004 state of things. Norman Osborn was back to being alive at this point, I know, because he came in at the end of this Clone Saga in like the 90s. So he, you know, which I don't think they ever should have brought him back. But using him as Marley makes sense since they were known to be business associates, you know, back in the old comics, back in the continuity, so... I'm a little confused because we first see this force bubble and then later they're fighting the wrecking crew, but it ultimately doesn't matter and it could be connected. But maybe that's got something to do with, you know, the dreamlike state.
Right.
You know,
right.
The details change around you and you're suddenly, you're in the same dream, but now you're in this situation for a different reason, you know. So I guess it kind of makes sense. The Avengers we see are Cap, Iron Man, Thor, Hawkeye, Wasp, and Yellowjacket. We see Black Panther later, too, although he's not part of the monument, as far as I can tell, that we see.
But neither is Spider-Man.
Well, that's true.
Spider-Man. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if Spider-Man showed up in the dream sequence part, you know, because he meant, you know, Spider-Man was there, but
right.
Peter Parker died, but not, he didn't true. Know that Peter Parker's Spider-Man, so. Jameson being a fan of the Golden Age heroes makes sense, and we see he has comics and posters of Cap, the Human Torch, the original Human Torch, Namor, the All-Winter Squad, and even the very obscure Red Raven.
And I liked his bed sheets.
Yeah, his Captain America bed sheets.
Those were cool.
Yeah. Now, this is the first time I ever heard of Joan Jameson, his first wife, and of course her name's Joan Jameson.
Of course.
But that's actually Stan Lee's wife's name was Joni, you know, so.
Right.
But her being killed by a masked assailant. Although that makes a ton of sense for the character because, honestly, creators have often struggled with giving Jonah a little more deeper motivation to hate Spider-Man that much.
Right.
I don't think they really needed to, but as characters got more fleshed out and stuff, they it was like, well, you know, he did the things that I couldn't do and different things like that, and he was, you know... He was a showboat, and, you know, that was kind of there from the beginning, but this actually does make sense.
It does, and I mean, you know.
Yeah, but according to the Marvel Wiki, now, that's a fan thing, but it said his wife died under mysterious circumstances, so I don't know how canon this is.
Or if it was remained canon.
If it remained canon, because who even knows what canon is nowadays. So.
Oh, yeah.
We see.
That's shifting sands.
Yeah,
you know?
No kidding. We see astronaut-to-be John Jameson playing with jets, which is a nice little touch. The X-Men scene shows a Cyclops, Wolverine, Storm, Emma Frost, the White Queen, Magneto, Toad, Sabretooth, Pyro, and Mystique. I don't know who's on what team other than Magneto, Toad, and Sabretooth are probably bad guys at this point, and probably Mystique. But I can't keep up, and honestly, the artist draws them kind of just standing around for the most part.
Right, and all, you know, it's not, you know,
they're not
divided
like on different sides of the page, So, kind of surprised there's no mention that Ben would be celebrating Hanukkah, but maybe they had not, that had not been 100% confirmed by this point.
Right.
So, I don't, you know, maybe it hadn't, I don't know exactly. I know it was sometime in the late 90s, 2000s that, they actually did a story where, you know, Ben celebrates Hanukkah. But at the Baxter building, we see Johnny impressing Franklin and Valeria by roasting chestnuts with his hands.
Chestnuts roasting over an open Johnny store.
That's right. While Reed trims the tree with his stretching powers. And Sue and Alicia cook a turkey, and Sue floats it in with her invisible force bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if she could cook it that way. I don't know. She could have Johnny just, you know, put some flame inside the force bubble and just roast it.
Cook it all the way around.
Cook it all the way around, yeah.
Without having to turn it,
Rotisserie.
Yeah.
Rotisserie turkey. Yeah, there you go.
We're overthinking this.
Yeah. I don't know where Peter and MJ were living at this point. I guess they were living with Aunt May, or she was living with them.
Right.
I don't know. She mentions missing Ben. This was, of course, before Peter and MJ's marriage was stupidly dissolved in that One More Day storyline, which we won't get into. But
no.
Ugh. Peter is both Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim Cratchit in this scenario.
Right.
Because he's the employee of the Scrooge,
mm-hmm.
but he's also the kid.
Right.
You know, that's not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, John Jameson's alone in a bar, but it could be worse because he could still be the man wolf. Because he was the man wolf, you know. So
and his name could be Jack Terrier, too.
Yeah, Jack Russell.
Jack Russell, whatever.
Well, now he's a werewolf by night. But, you know, John Jameson was the man wolf.
Still.
The whole moon pendant thing and all that stuff. Were you surprised by who the last ghost was, by any of who the ghosts were when they popped up?
No, I mean, you know, it's who would sell the books, you know.
Well, and it made sense with Cap being a man out of time. He was a ghost of Christmas mm-hmm. past. Ben's the gregarious type, like the ghost of Christmas present.
Right.
And Spider-Man being the ghost of the future for Jameson makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might make more sense if it was like Doctor Strange or somebody creepier, but
yeah, but that you're talking about his
Jameson.
Experience.
Yeah. Kind of shocking to see the Avengers dead and not Jameson. I mean, we don't, as far as we know, Jameson Jonah didn't die in this future storyline. Future timeline, but the Avengers did. And Peter Parker
died.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he's definitely Tiny Tim. This is still old geriatric Aunt May, so she just couldn't take Peter's death, I guess.
Well, apparently she can take it pretty good because she didn't die.
Yeah, but she was just
depressed
and had to have Mary Jane take care of her, so. I'm not sure about, what did you think about the Bugle went out of business because Peter wasn't there to take photographs of Spider-Man and Paige?
That might have been just a smidge more.
I think that was a little smudge, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't think it would have went out of business, because if that's the case, then we know Peter's underpaid, undervalued, that's part of his Parker luck, but if he's literally selling the newspapers, I know they did that whole story back when David Michelinie and Todd McFarlane were on Spider-Man, where Peter published, he had a book published of his Spider-Man photos,
mm-hmm.
and he went on tour across the country, and that way they could have Spider-Man go across the country. It was really a good, fun story.
Hmm.
But, you know, that's like the only time that I ever saw him really talk about how important those photos were. So I guess it's a little bit of a callback to that. So I guess it kind of makes sense, but it just kind of seems odd that the whole paper went out of business when Peter Parker died.
Right.
The wrecking crew is just kind of standing around in that FF action scene when Dr. Doom's blasting at them.
You know, why not?
Yeah,
you know?
It's just like, yeah, we're just waiting. Yeah, just we'll let you do it. But and it's interesting, this is 2004. Doc Ock looks very much like Alfred Molina in Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. And it's awful to see John as a homeless vagrant, but again, he's been worse. Man Wolf.
I know.
Yeah, like you said, my favorite aspect of this is Jonah is slightly, temporarily changed by this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going to give Peter a bonus, but it's only $10.
$10 whole. And it's not like we're talking about, you know, in the 1960s, what $10 would buy, you know, $10 is like, oh, here's a 20.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, you know, Peter's like, I just may treat myself to a Starbucks and a Danish on the way home.
Yeah. Woo.
There's a double page splash showing the Bugle staff, Jameson's wife, Marla, Mary Jane, Aunt May, and above them, some of the heroes that were in this story. They wish everyone a happy holidays, everyone. And it's cute, but it's kind of a strange, like, break.
Right. I mean, you've got that. I mean, I didn't realize until you said, hey, click it again, because I was reading the comic online. I thought, oh, that was the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, because, like, there's a little coda at the end, which, I mean, the ending is perfect, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
It's perfect for Jameson, so, yeah. I thought this was a whole lot of fun. I'm glad we found this. And if you guys haven't found it, it's on Comixology. If you got Marvel Unlimited, I'm sure it's on that. You know, you maybe find it in the back issue bin. There's like two other stories, and there's a FF story and an X-Men story. And I haven't read those yet, but give me some other Christmas comics to read. So that's always a good thing. So that'll wrap things up for our additional House of Frankenstein episode.
Yeah.
Special thanks to our daughter, Danny, and Fire and Water Network All-Stars Rob Kelly, the Irredeemable Shag, Siskoid, and Ryan Daly for their help with the intro.
A big thanks to our friend Terry O'Malley, a.k.a. Ward Hill Terry, for the House of Frankenstein theme. Terry's band, Stop Calling Me Frank, has a new album and a new Christmas single out called Some Kind of Christmas. Check the show notes on how you can get a free download. What a nice gift.
Yeah. Thanks as always to all our patrons who support the Fire and Water Podcast Network. That's also a nice gift. Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo and Matt Ryan for specifically supporting our JLU cast. We'll continue to thank you every time we do a podcast. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to see the many ways you can help support the network and all the shows here. And as Shag has pointed out, if it wasn't for the patrons, I don't think the network would be running right now with the way the bills ran up on how to keep our fees increased. So thank you all very much. Going back to JLU cast, it will return in January. And if things go according to plan, we should have some very special guests and special features to spice up our opening episode of Season 2, Part 2.
We hope everyone has a very safe but happy holiday season. We are all probably going to have to make some sacrifices this holiday season, but they will be well worth it if it keeps our loved ones safe and healthy. The new year looks like things may finally turn around for us, so let's stay safe and smart.
Yes, whatever holiday you celebrate, we hope it's a great one and that we all have a happy new year too. Oh, and before we go, we'll leave you with some holiday cheer from one of our patron saints, Lon Chaney Jr., after Danny of Christmas Past does the legal mumbo jumbo.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Super Mates is a Franklin and Franken production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. And is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright by respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue my mommy and daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com.
Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for Supermates and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FWPodcast.
Please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.
Was the night before Christmas, and all through the castle, my monsters were having a yuletide hassle. The tree was all trimmed in foolish things like wolfman fangs and vampire wings.
It was a monster's holiday,
but they were up to no good.
It was a monster's holiday,
didn't act like good monsters should.
It was a monster's holiday,
they found themselves a new prey.
It was a monster's holiday,
they planned to rob Santa's sleigh. They were making a list and checking it twice. Frankenstein wanted a shiny new trike, a new chain for Yanish, a brace for Igor's back, a shaver for the Wolfman, a new cape for Drac.
It was a monster's holiday,
but they were up to no good.
It was a monster's holiday,
didn't act like good monsters should.
It was a monster's holiday,
they found themselves a new prey.
It was a monster's holiday,
they planned to rob Santa's sleigh. The
mummy was to signal from the castle roof at the very first sound of a reindeer's hoof. The Santa slid down the chimney wall. The zombies were to make off with sleigh all. For beyond the moat there rose such a clatter, I jumped to the window to see what was the matter. Like a bolt of lightning, it happened so quick. There in our midst stood old Saint Nick.
It was a monster's holiday.
Yeah, but they were up to no good.
It was a monster's holiday.
They didn't act like good monsters should.
It was a monster's holiday.
They found themselves a new prey.
It was a monster's holiday.
They planned to rob Santa's sleigh. But he began to dig down deep in his sack and came up with the traction for Igor's back. Drax got his cape. Frankie promised to behave. And the wolf man was happy. Now he can shave.
It was a monster's holiday.
And all ended well.
It was a monster's holiday.
Santa was really swell.
It was a monster's holiday.
No need to rob Santa's son.
It was a monster's holiday.
Maybe next year he'll come back. Now, you monsters, what do you think of Santa? Wasn't he great? Remember, he's the one you wanted to bait. He brought you happiness and cheer and wished you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Now, wait a minute, Mommy. What did you think of Santa? Mommy Dunn told me when I was in Band-Aid that he was the greatest. Yes, he was the greatest. And a Merry Christmas to everybody. And you remember, there's going to be a full moon.
You're late.
Sir.
What do you mean by coming in here at this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time, sir.
You are indeed. Step this way, Mr. Cratchit, please.
It's only once a year, sir. It won't be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
I'm sure you were. Well, we won't beat about the bush, my friend. I'm not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. Which leaves me no alternative but to...
Send you a nice box of Christmas meat. Best I can do. Get out of here. Bring me more photos.